And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning. We've arrived at another Friday, 4 minutes past nine. It's Friday the 12th of May 2023, and you're welcome along to the show. I do hope you're very well indeed, and hopefully you'll stick around for the next 3 hours. Get involved in the programme. We're going to introduce our Friday panel right now. We want your views as well. 086 60 25,000 to get involved in the conversation here. 086 60 25,000. Or give us a call on 074 91 25,000 and emails comments at highlandradio.com. If you want to watch the programme, see our guests, hop on to YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. You can watch on your phone, your tablet, your smart TV or your Fire Stick. We're also across Facebook, Highland Radio Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport, and you can simply click Watch Live on our website. No excuse not to be involved, and more of you involved in watching and listening to the programme than before, so we really appreciate that. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Okay, let's introduce our guests. It's a blended approach we have today because we have in studio with us Chris Ashmore. Good morning to you, Chris. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you with us and joining us remotely. Dr. Peter O'Rourke, former consultant orthopaedic surgeon. Good morning to you, Peter.
Morning, Greg.
Great to have you with us. And also we have with us historian Dr. Joe Kelly. Hi, Joe.
Mighty white, Greg. And I love the shirt as well. I'll just back him up on it.
Thank you very fancy shirt Friday. I think he's trying to describe it as. But anyway, moving. I should have thrown a jacket on now, having had a look at you, Joe.
I'm going to go for a charity raffle for Greg's shirt today. Someone will pay for it. We put it out there to the public.
I strongly doubt anyone might, but be that as it may. On the programme this week, we heard stories from people who've had incredibly long waits at Letterkenny University Hospital. Again, we heard from the Irish Consultants Association. They're demanding major investment is needed in the West and Northwest to increase the number of beds and increase staff numbers. They say patient outcomes are becoming negatively impacted now. We also heard that you're more likely to get cancer and have a worse outcome simply because you live in the West and Northwest of Ireland. And that means major investment is needed in cancer services, as we heard again on the programme this week. It was kind of a theme that ran through it. I'll go to you first, if that's all right, Dr. Peter O'Rourke. I mean, how is it tolerated? I know we've talked about this in the past and we've a lot to get through and we won't dwell too long on this, but I can't ignore the various elements of health stories that's come through this week. It seems that we're going in the wrong direction.
Well, we have been for years and there's nothing to suggest that we're going to change that. Part of the problem for the Northwest, in particular Donegal, is the fact that we're very peripheral. Sailtha down in Galway don't really have any interest in us. They're only interested in increasing their own services in the Galway region. And the other problem we have is the proximity, of the border to Derry, which means some political influence is trying to sort of have cross-border services, which really doesn't work because even before Brexit, it wasn't going to work. And I'm sure after Brexit, it's going to be more difficult. So we're out on a limb and we're going to suffer because of it.
But we're hearing calls from all the right places, from the consultants group, from groups that represent and speak on behalf of cancer patients and those that provide cancer care. We've got ministers based in the West and Northwest. It seems that we should all be on the same page and making a difference. But you're offering not much hope there.
No, I mean, we don't have enough political support up here. I mean, I'll give you an example, not just cancer, but say cardiac services. We have a coronary catheterization lab that comes a day or two every fortnight. And you get the likes of Waterford who have one 9 to 5 and they want one 24 hours a day and another one 9 to 5. The Northwest has just lagged behind everybody in every service. And not just cancer services, but Galway basically want to do everything and they want to build services there to the detriment of other hospitals. I mean, because there's only so much money and they spend it in Galway. There's none to spend in Donegal. I mean, the only reason we have a breast service is because there was major fight for it, what was it, 10 or 15 years ago. Otherwise, it was going to go. So, I mean, it's the breast service, to be honest, is in Donegal on sufferance from Sailtha and various other groups. So that's the situation we're in. They don't really care about us. And our politicians have never done enough over the years to actually put us in a strong position as they have, for instance, in Sligo.
So we are seemingly, if you listen to the language, told in relation to the delivery of services in the Northwest that that's not going to happen, that it is going to be out of Galway, an awful lot of them, and it's like it and lump it. There's no apologies for that anymore. Is that something we should be resisting?
Yeah, we can resist it all we like, unless we have some leverage, and that's the politicians. We have five politicians up here, and we've had ministers up here, but despite that, the hospital has been gradually run down. I mean, it's heading towards the stage where it will be a district hospital or a community hospital rather than hospital providing services. It's virtually impossible to recruit consultants. The Sláinte Care contract is not going to help that situation. And Letterkenny is always on the hind tit. And unless there is a major, major influx of cash and beds, you won't be able to attract people to work in the hospital. And if you can't attract the people to work in the hospital and good quality, well-trained people, your service is just going to gradually go downhill. And that's what I see happening in Letterkenny.
And it's not just attracting them to the hospital, it's retaining these key staff as well, because they're seeing other options in the private sphere, presumably.
Well, both private and public. I mean, the number of consultants who have moved on or in the process of moving on is quite a lot. And also, there's a major number of retirements. I retired 2.5 years ago, and there's at least half a dozen of my contemporaries who are retiring in the next 18 months or so. And replacing them is going to be virtually impossible. And the other part of the problem for Letterkenny is from a medical political side of things is most of the appointees to the hospital are not trained in Ireland and do not have the connections in Ireland, which means that if they're trying to get something done, they're talking to deaf ears.
OK, I'll come back to you. Chris Ashmore, freelance journalist, owner of Smovey Fitness as well. I mean, you know, we're hearing there from someone who has an intimate knowledge of the workings of the health system. Sobering.
Indeed it is. And, you know, in many ways, this is, I suppose, another example of regional imbalance. And you see it in so many countries that this drift towards the capital city and the bigger cities, they seem to get more. The rural areas get left behind. I have some cousins in France who would live in a rural area, and a little bit like here, you know, they've a 3-hour trek to a hospital, and it's a problem in so many countries. If you're in a peripheral area, that the bigger cities do tend to get the investment, and it's hard to see any change happening.
Again. So is it a health tax then, effectively?
Well,
living a distance from urban areas.
It's a huge disadvantage. And, you know, I would hope that maybe in the years to come, one of the ways that maybe we could get around this, if you do have more regional growth and we don't have such a concentration on Dublin as we do at the moment, it's a massive issue. I'm sure if you live in a rural part of Norway or Sweden, you know, other countries have the same thing. And even if we look at Northern Ireland, there were in Newry, there was a lot of talk about downgrading the hospital there and people saying, look, having to make the trip to Belfast, which is relatively short if you're in Newry as well. But there's always this argument put out about having the centres of excellence. And certainly, you know, there is merit there. But if you look at Ireland, I mean, it does seem to be that axis of Dublin-Galway, and we are certainly missing out more than anyone.
Well, in terms of model four hospitals, I think is the phrase, there's four or five around Dublin and one in the west.
Yeah. If you look at a map and you were starting from scratch, you could perhaps argue if you had Sligo, Limerick and Dublin, at least that would be a better spread than at the moment. But one wonders, with Galway getting so much attention, will things slow down there, or is it going to be a case that Galway will just keep becoming that number two outside of Dublin for the investment?
Yeah, indeed. And then you hear stories all the time of people, the difficulty in getting down there. And also, too, I am sure there are people actually refuse treatment or don't go down that path simply because they don't feel that they can take that on. I mean, these are the ramifications. These are the people we can't leave behind. People that simply don't have access to a vehicle or are on their own or a little bit older, widowed. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? But, like, you know, it's I think when we talk about having to travel great distances for services, we really have to consider what this means to individuals.
Again, the most vulnerable are the people who suffer, people who may not have access to transport. And as we all know, like the bus journey down to Galway, yes, the roads are improving, but it's still 4 hours on a bus, which if you're not feeling well, is quite an ordeal that you can do without.
Dr. Joe Kelly?
It's a terrible vista, the way that what Dr. O'Rourke, and I have to agree with him, the picture that he has drawn, not only is it bad, but it looks like it's going to get a lot worse. It's a terrible, frightening vista for anybody, considering we all have ill health, we all have relations and family and friends that have ill health, and to think that consultants aren't able to be recruited, services aren't there, and it's going to get worse. And there's only one word to describe that, and that's neglect. And it's not just today that the neglect has happened, it's been decades and decades of neglect. And okay, we're on the periphery, but that doesn't excuse poor service. And as I said before to you, Greg, the Dun and Donegal, are we Dun, D-O-N-E in Donegal? And it would look like that there's a different kind of think in the east of Ireland as for the west of Ireland. And it's not just in our hospital service, it's rail, it's infrastructure, even Gardaí cars, we can't even get them. If you draw a line from Galway to Louth, Donegal, Cavan, and forget about it with regards to Gardaí resources and things like that. So this is across the board, and it's not to blame. I know Mary Cotton was very much involved in the New Letterkenny Hospital. I know Joe McHugh did a lot for the breast cancer. And I know Charlie McConnell, they're doing their bit insofar as they're trying to solve a problem that's very, very difficult. But
well, they listen to very strong public organised protests. But we have a minister in this county. We've got two opposition TDs that are some of the highest profile TDs in Sinn Féin. And we've got a very vocal and high profile TD in Thomas Pringle. I mean, is it not time that they all stepped up to the plate then and listened to people like Dr. O'Rourke and actually did what they're all elected to do, and that's to represent us on such serious matters such as health?
Well, if you indulge me just a minute, in the sense that I was Googling last night and I came across this statement, almost 10 years exactly tomorrow. And it was Bill Maher, CEO of the Galway and Roscommon University Hospital Group. And he welcomed the minister's announcement about the new plan for the North and the Northwest. And I'll just read a few lines if you indulge me. Today's announcement is 10 years ago. Today's announcement is good news for the people living along the Western seaboard. The new hospital group will have autonomy to manage resources, both funding and staffing, in a way that is appropriate to the needs of the patients we treat. The group will work to national standards of quality and care, which set out to ensure that quality of care is consistent across all hospitals in the country. We will implement the National Care Programme and Small Hospital Framework and play to the strengths of each of the hospitals in the new group so that each hospital will develop services of which they are their locality will be proud of. Now, that's 10 years ago. That's a public statement. How much of that promise has been realised? None of it appear.
All right, and Dr. O'Rourke, I think's backing you up there.
Well,
none.
Go, Dr. O'Rourke. I bow to your knowledge and experience.
Well, let me just give you an example of what I see happening in the future. We've seen in the media about Enniskillen losing surgical services because they couldn't recruit medical or surgical staff. That could easily happen in Donegal as well. And then suddenly we'd have no surgical staff. If you have no surgical staff, you can't really run an emergency service. So the hospital will just gradually be downgraded, which is effectively what happened to Enniskillen. Protest by the people hasn't got anywhere because they just can't recruit people to work in the hospital because it's presumed there's some problems in the hospital and they're getting difficulty with the resources. Letterkenny could easily go the same way. I mean, I think there has been some influence by politicians, but not enough. And I suspect what we need to consider doing is in the next general election, run a few hospital candidates to make the politicians sit up and take notice. Because if you put a few hospital candidates up for the next general election and it's taking votes from various people, it might make the politicians a little more interested in actually achieving something in the hospital.
Mike, Chris, what do you think about that? I mean,
People power is one of the ways that things can change. We've had protests here in Letterkenny before. We've had hospital candidates. I have to say that I think sometimes some of the turnout at some of those protests was below what I would have expected, given the seriousness of the issue.
Can I suggest, and I think this is a fly in the ointment, that there's almost an acceptance now by the people of Donegal that it's not. I don't even know if they believe it's a fight or we've lost the fight or whatever, but it's just accepted. Maybe it's because we have to deal with it on an individual basis and not as a collective. I don't know. But I actually couldn't see really. I can't see the person that steps out to be the voice of the hospital running as a candidate, if that makes sense. I think we've just been beaten down to the point that we're almost, are we just happy if we can stay quiet and keep what we've got?
Yeah, I think sadly a lot of people would feel, you know, what is the point in protesting? Because in the past, it's had limited impact. That said, if you can get a united campaign and the right people fronting it, I don't think you should ever underestimate what can be done. And, you know, changing tack slightly, but, you know, look at Knock Airport and the example there and people saying something that could never happen. If you can get support, and what more important an issue is there than health?
Are people beaten up on this to the point, Joe, that might be hard to, you know, muster that type of support?
I
don't want to be defeatist either, by the way. I'm just sort of trying to get a sense of what the feeling is out there.
You know, there's a great saying called St. Teresa of Avila, and she's one wonderful line: when you're sick of being sick, you cease to be sick. When the people of Donegal have enough suffering and enough neglect and said, look, we've drawn the line in the sand here, we've had enough, then maybe then they'll start fighting back. Maybe then they'll start considering how they work, would be politically or any other thing, that we get our fair share. And I don't know if we're at that point yet, but I don't lose hope. I never lose hope, never ever doubt, never have lose faith. We have to keep having faith and confidence and belief. And as a county, we have a great, great young people and people of the vast experience and culture and personality. Donegal is a great, great county, great, great people, and we mustn't lose confidence. And just to point out the political thing, Thomas Gilday, who got elected with the MMDS, and it was an amazing achievement by the MMDS and by Thomas Gilday to get elected. He was just an ordinary man with a simple issue and got elected. And the politicians sat up and listened after that. And he held the balance of power as well, himself and Harry Blaney, two Donegal men at that time. So, Dr. O'Rourke, I mean, I'm sure now that you're retired, you might have time and you might give a consideration to what you're saying.
I'm not sure Peter O'Rourke has the spare time to run as a candidate. But just finally, before we take a break and move on, Peter, you know, I mean, obviously it feels like we are distant from where the decisions are made in Dublin, but I don't think it helps us that we're distant from the decisions that are made probably in Galway, and a lot of focus in developing services and resources down there. And I suppose if not much noise is being made in Donegal, why would you pay any attention to it? You just batter on with your plans.
Well, this is true. And if you remember, as part of the Sláintecare thing, they're planning to build three elective, which is planned surgical hospitals, Dublin, Cork and Galway. So there's little enough surgery to be done in Letterkenny as it is. You put a place down in Galway, people won't be having any surgery in Letterkenny or Donegal at all. They'll have to travel down to Galway for everything.
But I heard some politicians saying that they were told and that's the right thing to do, and that, you know, that's the way people have their best outcomes. And, you know, when that was announced, and I remember exactly what you're saying there now, I kind of was coming across with the same attitude that you are. And I was effectively told that, you know, this is the way forward. This is the way things are going to be. And this is how we get best outcomes.
5 or 10% of surgery is complex. 90% is routine. You don't need to be the best orthopedic surgeon in the world to do a hip replacement or a knee replacement or fix an ankle. You don't need to be the best general surgeon in the world to take out a gallbladder or repair a hernia. And they are the bread and butter stuff. Now, if you're doing complex cancer surgery, yeah, you need to be one or two people doing all of the complex surgery. But the routine stuff, which is what Letterkenny needs to be doing, and can't, is not something that needs to be transferred down to Galway just because they're building a big empire down there.
All right. Fascinating insight and comments from all three guests. A listener says, Peter O'Rourke is right in what he's saying. The Northwest has been badly let down by government. Our own politicians have not done enough to fight our corner. Why can an audit of staffing levels not be done between Sligo and Letterkenny in all disciplines, from doctors, nurses and facilities, personal time? Letterkenny got its fair share of staff. Another, in Ireland, they seem to believe we need great football stadiums before hospitals. Another, being on a trolley has always caused worse care for patients and staff. Same as usual, unfit for purpose government overseeing poor local hospital resources and sometimes management. And another, thank God the next election will eradicate the cosy monopoly that has served the poor and ordinary so badly over the years. People seem to think it is a fait accompli that there's going to be an election, that new people will be in power and everything changes. The government parties, currently Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Greens, if they manage to garner the right support elsewhere, are still very well placed to be returned at the next election, Chris. I think people have this presumption that there's an election, everybody changes and everything is dramatically improved all of a sudden. History would suggest that that's not really how things play out.
History would suggest radical change in this country is not exactly on the agenda. But, you know, sometimes if you have a hung parliament or if there's a balance of power, we have seen independents wielding a little bit of power, and it's not necessarily the best way to get something done, but certainly
it is for your area.
It
but
is
that
for your
kind
area.
Of election politics, if you don't happen to have one of the players in your area, then it's actually a disadvantage.
And, you know, that may well be one of the best ways that Donegal could get extra resources in if such a scenario existed.
Interesting, but the one independent we have in Thomas Pringle has insisted that's not the type of politics he wants to be involved in. Just a quick one on this, Dr. Kelly, just to that point, you know, people presume that the storm is coming or something along those lines in the next election. I think people are perhaps could be in for a rude awakening. Who's to say?
Well, look, I'm not wanting one side or the other.
No, neither am I. I'm just pointing it all out.
I'm not suggesting that you have. I think you're very balanced, Greg. But the thing I would say is, even if you change the government in with any party tomorrow morning, it won't build more hospitals. It won't recruit more surgeons. And I'll just give you an example. I'm a teacher. If you were to give our school 20 more teachers tomorrow morning, we couldn't cope with that because we've no rooms for them to teach in. It's not a quick fix changing the government. Now, it might change the attitude and all the rest, but long term, this is a problem that needs to be planned. If we're going to sort out the hospital issues, we need more beds, we need more surgeons. And that just isn't a change of government that does this. This is policy. And it's back again to who is running the country. Is it the politicians or is it the civil service?
But in relation to that, though, I would love to see health issues like health decoupled from party politics. I would like to see it because you can't do it in 5-year cycles. I would like to see it done in a cross-party way. Some would argue that Sláinte Care to some extent is that, but I don't believe it is. That we can't be dealing with health in 5-year bite sizes leading up to election, post-election, leading up to election, post-election. It's getting us nowhere.
Well, I think, personally, I've said this to you before, I think our political system is broken. And I'm not on about parties, I'm on about our political system. We need regional government. So a government that is, the dial is a legislation, but it's everything else, and it shouldn't be. There's too many TDs and too many senators, and the whole system of government should be reformed in the country. And what we should have is four sub-dials, so to speak, responsible for their own area. So the Northwest, we have specific problems of isolation, periphery, transport, etc., etc., and that we would have our own local dial feeding back into a bigger government, in the sense less TDs, but in a bigger sense. But we don't have regional government. We don't have it. And this is where the problem is. And we can bow and bite and shout and jump, but when we get into the dial, there's 169 TDs, Donegal sends in 5, we're outnumbered. As where we were grouped in with Sligo.
Yeah, but if we had an attitude, right, where wherever a government is based, it was a government for the entire country and not just for the population centres, that requires a change of mindset. You see, the problem I think we have too, Peter O'Rourke, before we move on to other issues, is that we did have a situation recently, and this is no harm to the health minister, but he was sent up to Donegal and he was briefed on the level of investment into. We talked about this actually in the past. I think it was 30-odd million or something for Letterkenny University Hospital, and I believe it was you, Peter, that talked about. No, it wasn't actually. It was Paddy Rooney who talked about how the majority of that's just been taken up with pay rises and what have you. But he hadn't been briefed about the problems that were here. You know, he was really dropped in it to some extent. And I thought that was really quite telling in that who is actually running the show. And as I say, it's no offence to the health minister himself, but he was sent up here with the good bullet points. But when it came down to the problems and the major problems he should know about, it was like, oh, right, OK, well, I'll check that when I get back to the office. That's a huge disconnect, I think, Peter.
Well, the problem is the minister is briefed by the civil service and the civil service tell the minister what they want him to hear. So he's not being briefed by, you know, people like me who worked in the hospital and see what the problems are. He's possibly been briefed by the general manager who is unfortunately having to sing from the sail to him sheet. But to give you an example, I mean, wondering about whether a change of government will make a big difference. The reason the health service is in this situation is a lot of it's because of the politicians, because they all want quick fixes. And if I give you an example of that is the NTPF. The NTPF has spent 1.5 billion since 2006 supporting private hospitals. The number of private hospitals as things like the Beacon Clinic, the Hermitage, the Galway Clinic, etc., wouldn't exist except for the NTPF. And the problem is the politicians want waiting lists down. The only place you can bring them down is the place where the money's been spent, the private hospitals. You get the minister down at the nursing congress last week saying we're going to appoint 850 new nurses. These 850 new nurses don't exist because they're all working in private hospitals. So even if we're training nurses, they go to either Australia or work in private hospitals because there's no point in a place like Letterkenny appointing 100 new nurses because there's nowhere for them to work because there isn't the infrastructure.
Which is what Dr. Kelly talked of in education. Yeah, okay. A caller says, my partner works nearly 50 plus hours a week as a consultant and is usually too exhausted to talk once at home. The only reason we stay is because our child is settled in school. Once they finish school in 3 years, we will leave if conditions don't change. I know of some colleagues that are actively trying to leave Letterkenny Hospital. Dr. O'Rourke is right in everything he's saying. Hopefully he will run for the election or run in the election. That's the second nomination. That's the second nomination you've received so far this morning. Okay. We heard some calls this week for an increase in spending in Ireland's defence budget with claims that we're sitting ducks in the event of an invasion and we are reliant on Britain to protect our skies. Should we be spending more? Could we put up any reasonable defence even if we did? I know my views on this one, but anyway, we'll have a quick chat on this one. Chris, what say you?
Yeah, I was looking at a few figures and, you know, at the moment Ireland spends about 1.2 billion a year on defence. Now, compared with our EU neighbours, you know, we're not even at the races here. Just in pure stats terms, we spend about 0.2% of our GDP on defence, which is a fifth or a sixth of the European average, which is 1.3%. Now, we're just talking about this after a discussion about health. So could you imagine if there was pressure on to increase our defence budget sixfold to bring it up to the European average at a time when we've so many other things? Look what you could do with the health sector if you increased your defence budget from 1 billion a year up to 6 or 7 billion. Somewhere like Greece, I mean, they have issues with the whole migrant side of things, and that the part of Europe you're located is a factor. Latvia, like Greece, is one of the highest spending, but they're spending 8 to 10 times in terms of GDP more than us. Yes, I mean, we are wide open. The Irish Air Corps has 26 aircraft, and that includes a number of helicopters and about 750 personnel. We saw during the week about the British having a deal over the years to allow planes over Irish airspace to intercept. Be they
Russian or
whatever.
Well, I think our planes can't get over 25,000 feet.
Yeah,
that's
so,
our
I mean,
city. But as I said on the program yesterday, look what happened in Ukraine, okay? So, you know, they had part of their country annexed. They knew the Russians were coming back again. They were able to prepare and everything, and yet still they were able to offer... They would have offered zero defence, really. Ukraine would have been taken over by the Russians if it wasn't for the Western intervention. 170-plus billion from the United States, you know, 20-30 billion from Europe, more money coming from elsewhere, and still, look what's happening there. What's the point in us spending, wasting money, wasting Irish lives, when really they're probably flying over us or just going through us to get to the British or the French?
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say a lot of people would probably assume if we were invaded by some foreign power that the Brits, the Americans, our fellow Europeans would come in and help us out.
Mm. All right, I don't know if I have an appetite for any increased spend. What about you, Peter O'Rourke?
Well, we don't have any real enemies. The chance of anybody wanting to invade us, we don't have any natural resources. We don't have any oil. We're not a threat to anybody. So I think the chances of us needing ever to fight a war is a big zero. We have performed great work for the UN with our armed forces. Our naval service that went down to the Mediterranean when there was a lot of the big immigration and all the boats crossing the Mediterranean and helped out there for a couple of years. I don't think we will ever have or could afford armed forces that could defend the country. So I think we're limited to having a presence, which is necessary, and a small air corps and the naval service. And the naval service is struggling even to put its ships to sea. So having more naval equipment or air force equipment, I think, is pretty pointless, and it's not something we can really afford.
I agree. Okay, Dr. Kelly, go on.
Well, the first question I would ask, who's asking for this increased spend? And I don't know the answer to that, but I'm just wondering who's asking for it. And Dr. Rourke has pointed
sometimes out these things are flight, kite flying. You know, it's like the European army. It's about a citizens' assembly or conversation about our neutrality. It's actually not a citizens' assembly. Little meetings that are taking place, okay? And the way it's phrased is, you know, not what can we do to strengthen it? What can we do to use it for good? It's like, well, how do we get shot of it? You know, for whatever neutrality we have. It's just, this is the way people are influenced, Joe. It's just a drip drip of conversation to the point whereby, you know, if people have a direction they want to go, the people have been softened up to follow.
Well, I mean, just listening to what Dr. Rourke said there, and I totally agree with him, you know, we're a neutral country. We're recognised the world over for being a peace loving people, and if you look at our own constitution, Article 29, you know, we realize that there's need for friendly cooperation. We don't have enemies. We're known the world over, and for us to militarize ourselves is madness. And further to that, if you look at the European constitution, it doesn't exist, by the way, but it's called the Treaty of Lisbon, Article 42.7, which says that if any other of the countries are attacked, there's a duty on the other states to help militarily and protect. So that's there. And it's also supplemented by the Article 51 in the Charter of the United Nations. So if we were to be attacked, other countries would come and to our assistance. But it's not practical for us to have a defence to the level of England or any other country. We just couldn't do that. We couldn't afford it. And we don't have enemies as such. And it would maybe be better if we increased our budget into diplomatic services. And again, back to the Ukraine, we know, for example, with our own troubles in recent years, 40 years of it in Northern Ireland, and where we've got to a peace process, please God, that will continue to work. Somebody has to sit down and talk in Ukraine and Russia at some stage. And there's no point in saying goodies and baddies.
But we don't make that decision, Joe. Your EU makes that decision. We can't do solo runs. And it's very clear from the comments from both Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin that we very much nailed our colours to the mast, to the point whereby we had a direct threat to Ireland by the Russian diplomat to Ireland. So I know where you want us to go, but it's the other direction we're going, Joe.
Yeah, well, that's politics. As we would like our hospitals as well. The politicians have one idea and the people have another. I think Michael D is ideally placed, and I've said this before in your show, go and meet Putin. Go and say to him, like, how do we bring this to an end? And I know his wife got into trouble for suggesting it. But at the end of the day, we know in Northern Ireland, Martin McGuinness had lunch with the Queen I mean, he sat down with Ian Paisley. We know that enemies have to sit down and talk, and Ireland are uniquely positioned at all times. Mm. We don't need to mother.
I think they're trying to weaken Russia to the point, though, whereby it's in their interest to come to the table too. But I think, like, I mean, that's what we should aspire to. But how do we get there?
Well, it's a matter of us believing in who we are. And we talked in one of my shows there, what you're talking about, the Garda Síochána, the keepers of peace. We're a peace-loving, peace-keeping people. We've gone all over the world, and we're loved everywhere we go because we're not a violent people. We're not an aggressive people. We laugh at ourselves and we enjoy others. And I think we're uniquely positioned in all those kind of situations diplomatically to try to build peace. And nowhere is that better than our own experience in Northern Ireland. And we can maybe leverage that to help other countries find peace and forget about the political influences. I mean, questions could be asked, for example, with America. Are they behind the Sudanese civil war? Because the Sudanese were giving the Russians a warm water port. I mean, there's a lot of politics going on, but we have to stand back from that and drive on and find peace. Peace is a price that we should be willing to fight for.
Mm-hmm. Okay, stay right where you are, and we'll hear more from Peter, Chris and Joe after the break. Okay, given the money the public already pay RTE and the GEA, and given the fact that the GEA is our national sport and the RTE is a public service broadcast, not to mention that the GEA is an amateur sport, should big games or any other games, or any of the games for that matter, Chris Ashmore, be behind a paywall?
Well, this is certainly a very big issue. Greg, people are used to getting things for free, and the GAA, and in particular in recent years through television, we have seen games becoming ever more popular. And look at the furore we've had now, in particular in relation to the Munster Hurling Championship and people not being able to see games. A couple of points, you know, great if RTE could cover more and it's all for free and we can all watch it. There is a limit to the number of games that RTE itself can cover, so there is certainly an argument.
Just before you move forward, do you mind me saying something? We don't get any games for free. We pay for it. We pay for
through our
license fee.
Exactly.
We contribute 50 million euro in taxation to the GAA. And also we pay handsomely at the gate as well. But anyway, go ahead with your point.
Yeah, well, that was what I was going to lead on to. I mean, this raises a bigger question about how we fund broadcasting and the national broadcaster, and there's been talk about this for a long time about reforming the broadcasting. You know, should there be some type of tax put on mobile phone devices and tablets? Because a lot of people are also accessing coverage of games sitting on a bus or a train, watching it on a 3-inch screen. You know, maybe we should be looking at having some sort of a levy or a tax on your mobile phone bill. You know, would people object to paying 5% on your...
I don't watch RTE, of course I would. You know, how do Virgin Media survive? They're
fully independent.
Fully independent.
So if there's a big broadcast...
I'll tell you, don't come at me with a levy on my mobile phone, right, whilst you're paying someone 600,000 euro per year to do an hour's work.
Yes.
Okay, now if you sort that out, then come back and talk about levies. But if you're paying people extortionate wages because, you know, if you let them go, they would be swept up by CNN, Fox News, BBC, the BBC, Virgin Media, News Talk. Nonsense, they wouldn't. They would be sitting at home doing a podcast with 500 people listening to them.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing, you know, you look at 2FM, the argument is there, you know, should the state be funding that? It's essentially a
10,000 euro. I'll give you an example of that. They have a competition on the morning, the breakfast show. 10,000 euro you can win.
Yeah.
10,000, and it's 10,000 euro of taxpayers' money that they're putting up. And then you have independent stations that have to come up with different ways, different mechanisms to try and compete with that. So you've got the 2FM, which is a station with a completely unfair disadvantage that can take 10,000 euro out of our pockets, half of Letterkenny's license fee, and put it up as a prize for answering questions.
Back to my point, let's put a levy onto the mobile user. Don't shoot that down. You know, how many people, you know, if you're paying 20 quid a month and there's a, a small percentage of that on your phone.
How much does the entire wage bill of Highland Radio, I would say, is not a great deal more than
a few presenters
not a few. Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, Ryan Topperty.
Well, that's something that, you know, RTE, they are going to have a period of real instability coming up. There's also a drop in advertising revenue, which they're, again, partly because there's so many alternatives out there. There's so much stuff that's free online. And then we've got the issue as well. Not only is there stuff that you have to pay for online, but then people are also accessing that illegally through illegal websites and dodgy boxes and all sorts of things. So it's a topic that really needs a national discussion, because what we have at the moment isn't working.
But should the national game be behind a paywall and GEA and RTE making another 10 plus million off the back of hard-pressed people? We are actually in a cost of living crisis here.
Well, if you take away the paywall and if we didn't have the other channels there, you know, RTE can't cover all the games. So you've mentioned Virgin Media and independent stations. Again, there's a limit on how much they can do. Sky came in and that started the whole process going. Once again, it's the people who are maybe more vulnerable, who can't afford it, who can't see these games as they would have years ago. And it's not just GAA. When we've had the same discussion over rugby and horse racing and big events, should they be covered by the state broadcaster? I think most people would agree that the main events should be covered by the state broadcaster. I think the issue also is the charges they're putting on some of the games. You know, €12 a match for some of them. I think that's a lot for a game. I personally wouldn't have a big opposition to paying a small amount. And then you wonder, you know, are you being screwed here again?
Well, of course, because you can't really, I mean, you can't watch a hurling game on a phone. If you want to watch it on your big screen, you have to be able to cast it. That's using your internet twice. Then you have to have good internet. Then you have to actually be able to do that. If you're mirroring the screen, it's a crap experience. Okay, we'll come back to you. Dr. Joe Kelly, what do you think?
A lot there that you're asking. The first thing is the G, and then there's the RT.
Chris brought me into wages, and I ran away with myself there.
That's correct. I mean, you mentioned that Ryan Tubberty, he gets 600,000 for 1 hour. So, I mean, you do a 3 hour show. I'm just trying to do the maths there of what you're earning. But anyway, let's leave it at that. But we're already, as you point out, paying for a license fee to RT. And the question is, we're behind this paywall that you will only get to see these games if you pay for it. Now, the fee isn't terrible high. It's €2 a game.
In fairness, that's if you did the early bird last September or something.
I understand that. But what people need to maybe realise is that, first of all, the GAA have had the biggest income. They made $96 million last year. Very interesting when you break it down. $16 million on the All-Ireland football, $10 million on the hurling, $6 million on gate revenues, and $17 million on the hiring out of Croke Park for concerts. I think they had 7 concerts and corporate use and so forth. So the GAA are fairly making it as regards the finances of it. And I think the problem isn't so much RTE, because the GAA themselves have shot themselves in the foot by compressing the new GAA calendar of football, where it used to be in September. The hurling is now squeezed into 11 weeks, and only so many games can be shown on RTE in those 11 weeks. And it's the same for the GAA Championship. We're lucky in Ulster, the Ulster Championship, all the games are broadcast because RTE, BBC Northern Ireland, they're all, you know, there's different TV companies there, so we're benefiting from that. But the GAA themselves, I think, have the problem insofar as they've squeezed the championship into a much shorter time.
Okay, but let me put it to you like this. They squeezed the championship to a much shorter time, right? But it is they that benefit from GAA Go, and it is RTE that benefit from GAA Go. So it's all really quite convenient, isn't it, that we've got a lot of games in a short period of time that some have to go behind a paywall. You know, let's not forget that the head of sport in RTE and the director general of RTE are both on the board of GAA Go.
And Virgin Media have who were looking for the franchise as well. They have questioned it on a number of occasions that this GAA Go. Are they going to keep it behind a paywall? What games are they going to decide is going to be broadcast on free TV, terrestrial TV, and what's going to be behind the paywall? Are they going to keep the good games so they get more revenue from that? And it would seem to me that they have the monopoly on that. And that's a dangerous direction to be going in. But the question I would be asking is this. Our national sport, and no disrespect to any other sport, is GAA. And we get 69 free GAA games in the year. Rugby has 40 games. Now, rugby does not have the same participation and length and breadth of the country. And there's a question of equality to the GAA, and that's no disrespect to other sports. And this is where I agree with Donal Cusack, the former All-Ireland hurling captain for Cork. He was so brilliant on the Sunday's GAA programme on Sunday night. And he talked about how basically the GAA have surrendered, they've put up the white flag to other sports. I think the GAA need to have a hard look at themselves as regards how they're running our championship.
But they are, it's not that as much that they've put the white flag up to it. They are themselves digging around for a white flag to raise. They are creating the scenario even more so whereby they throw up the white flag, because what they are doing is counterintuitive to the growth of the game. There's lots and lots of older people who played, were involved in it, that can't afford GAA Go. They don't have the broadband, and we've heard from some of them today, and not all, don't have the technical know-how to actually watch it. Are we expecting them to watch a hurling game at a million miles an hour on their phone? Come on, that's not... Anyway, okay, Peter...
Greg, is like there's hundreds and thousands of men and women this evening and every other evening giving their time free to train young boys and girls, the length and breadth of the Ireland and in our own county and all the clubs. It's so vibrant, it's so community orientated, and this is all free. People are doing this for free. Our county clubs and Derry and every other club and county levels, they're having to raise hundreds and thousands of pounds to keep their county club going and keep their players going, etc., etc., for physiotherapies and whatnot. This has all been done at a voluntary level. It's more than just the 96 million that the GAA are making in the headquarters. It's the millions that are being made by ordinary Joe Soaps out there. And I think the kickback about this GAA Go isn't so much about the finances of it. I think it's the disrespect towards the ordinary, everyday person that is engaged in the GAA sport.
And that began as well, too, when they refused to take cash at the turnstiles as well, because that, again, excluded a huge cohort of people. Dr. O'Rourke, what say you?
To be honest, I'm not a GAA supporter, so it's going to be difficult for me to be too objective about it. But I find it very funny that an amateur sport has a budget of 96 million a year. It's a hell of a lot of money. But I mean, it's the way all sport is going. And people might complain about having to pay a couple of euros for a match, but I guarantee you there's people in Ireland who subscribe to Liverpool TV, Manchester United TV, Formula One TV, and we all pay Sky vast amounts of money every year. So it's the way sport is going. I mean, people, you know, on Sky would pay sport supplement on Sky, a movie supplement on Sky. It's just, I think it's emotive because it's the GAA, it's the national game, and people at a parish level are getting upset about it.
Might I say, though, Peter, with respect, that, like, say, for instance, if you subscribe to a pay-per-view boxing match or the Formula One or indeed the football, a lot of that is to fund the players' wages. You know what I mean? The players get a significant cut of that. In Ireland, it's lining the pockets of the GAA Central and RTE. It's not filtering down to the players who, without, there would be no sport.
And we've seen the players over the years have sort of wondering, should the GAA slightly become professional or semi-professional? I mean, I'm amazed that the managers for all these clubs work for just their expenses as well. And the players seem to be the only ones who get nothing out of it.
All right, okay. Except the joy of pulling on the county jersey. Dr. Peter O'Rourke, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for your time. Have a lovely weekend. Dr. Joe Kelly, see you soon. Great to have you back on the show. Take care of yourself. Thank you very much. And last but not least, and I think it was an interesting point there from Peter O'Rourke in the passing shot about how people are prepared to pay lots of different expenses for lots of different things, but perhaps not for GAA in a minute, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, he touched on Sky Sports there. I mean, people pay 70 euro a month to get a big package. worth pointing out, though, that, you know, the GAA will say, look, they are in the business of making money. They don't want to be making a loss at the end of the year, and that the more profit that they make, that some of that eventually does filter back through to grassroots through various grants for upgrading facilities at grounds around the country. And that should not be forgotten.
All right, Chris, listen, I really enjoyed having you on today. Thank you so much. And hopefully you'll come back again in the not too distant future. All right. Loads of you messaging in, texting in, calling in. Thank you so much for that. We'll be getting to some of what you have to say as well. And don't forget, too, coming up after 10, we have Seamus Gunn answering all your legal questions. So stay tuned for all of that. Stay watching as well across our social medias. Back with more shortly.